Welcome to the Baseballer Show, guys. I'm your host, DR. Guys, we got a great guest today from Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Left-handed slugger known for launching baseballs a long, long way, guys. Early days in St. Louis, postseason moments shook October up. He's delivered clutch homers, unforgettable celebrations, and nonstop energy. Get ready. Turn it up. Welcome to the mic. The big man himself, Big City. Or Jumbo Pepsi. I'm not sure which one.
No. We're gonna leave Jumbo Pepsi out. We'll go big, Big City.
Big City, Matt Adams. How are we doing today, man?
Doing great. How about yourself?
Not too bad, dog. We are gonna jump right into the Baseballer Blitz. So with this, home run if you love it, strikeout if you don't. Big bat flips after home runs. Home run or strikeout?
Home run for sure.
Love it. Love it. Wearing your World Series ring in public. Home run or strikeout?
I'm going to go home run. I actually just had it on last night. We had a holiday party my wife and I went to for her business. So I was like, she asked me, she goes, are you going to wear that thing tonight? And I'm like, yeah, of course. I probably worn it like maybe four times total since I got it in 2019. So I pick and choose I choose to wear it at. But
yeah. When you're going to Walmart, you're not.
No.
That's not the move. All right. The ABS challenge system, home run or strikeout?
That's a tough one. I'm gonna go home run on that one, because I got to experience it as a player in 2023 when they were first rolling it out, and then again once they kind of got the final touches on it last year, being a bench coach in AAA, I think it's gonna do well. I still think the umpires need to be in the game, and we got to keep that human element alive. But I just think there's too many close calls and in big time moments where a ball or strike could have really affect an outcome of a game one way or another. So I think it's good what MLB is doing.
No, and it gets interesting there, because I think it's towing the line of a robotic umpire, which is where me personally would not like that at all for the catcher position. But I think, you see some egregious stuff once in a while where you're like, hey, let's clean that one up.
For sure. But yeah, I'm definitely going home run on that one.
Awesome. Allowing hockey style fighting in baseball, home run or strikeout?
I'm going home run on that
one.
I think that would bring so much entertainment and edge to the game of baseball. I know it will never happen unless we decide to have penalty boxes in the dugout or behind home plate or whatnot. But I'm a big time hockey fan, so I'm all for being able to go out there and settle the score with an opponent on the field.
Hey man, a lot less chirping would be going. If Big City goes out there and shows them a thing or two, I think there's something to it.
Yeah. I had a run in last year, from the coaching side with a player. I'm not going to say the name, just kind of chirping back and forth as I was running back to the dugout, he was coming off the field. So that would have been an instance where we would have, he would have dropped the glove. I would have stopped and we may have thrown down right there on the field.
Oh, that's great, man. Absolutely awesome. So yeah, I mean, you just finished up playing. I think it's crazy. You went from playing right to, you were with the Padres AAA affiliate, El Paso Chihuahuas last year. Dude, you just love ball. I mean,
yeah.
Do you have hobbies?
Yeah, I'm getting into golf, for sure. I never really played it, during my playing days, but a lot of the coaches, there's a lot of business to be had on the golf course. So I'm trying to dial in that game and not lose too many baseballs or golf balls out on the course. But, yeah, golfing, going to hockey games here in St. Louis, supporting the hometown Blues. I would say those two are my two big hobbies. But yeah, it's like you said, I love the game of baseball. I eat, sleep, breathe it. Just really enjoy the game.
Yeah, just being out there, 162 or whatever it may be for you. I mean, that's crazy. But especially with golf, dude. So did you just like let the pitchers, I feel like they're the golfers, like when you're playing. And then you're like, hey, I have my baseball swing locked down. Now that you're in the managing side of things, you're like, okay.
Yeah. Like. Yeah. I the old school like mentality of, golf swing is going to mess up your baseball swing. That was instilled into me from my dad from such a young age. And but the more that I, you know, once I got to the big leagues and saw how many guys really played, like you hear of Cespedes going out there and playing before every game, and
crazy.
And the guy had a pretty damn good playing career. So I think, you know, I think I'm wanting to, you know, get more involved in the game and whatnot. So it's I think it's a fun sport. It's a frustrating sport for sure. Oh, yeah. The ball's not moving, and you know, I'm the best at topping it off the tee box and then having to go 5-10 steps in front of the woman's tees and hit my second tee shot.
I can just see, man. I can just see the big city spinning off a ball a little bit. I can see it.
I can pull a golf ball with the best of them for sure.
That's awesome, man. So, and I was just keeping up with you. I was doing a little Instagram stalk before we got on here, man. And I saw you were recently kicking it with Nelly. What was that all about?
Yeah. So we, my wife and I got invited to go to his, black and white ball here that he puts on, every winter here in St. Louis. And man, what a cool event. You know, it was a charity event. The first part of it was a charity event for Make-A-Wish, Missouri and Kansas. Which was super awesome to, you know, what he does, you know, for the city of St. Louis and everything. But then once dinner was over and the, you know, the Make-A-Wish awards were given out, they cleared everybody out of the ballroom and turned, you know, broke down the tables. And then, you know, Nelly, Ashanti, Busta Rhymes, Dougie Fresh, Jermaine Dupri, Murphy Lee, like all, you know, the St. Lunatics, they all got up on stage, performed. You never know.
Crazy.
Lil Bow Wow was there, like, in the crowd. Like, you never know really who's going to pop out of the crowd and grab the mic and just put on a concert. It was a sight to be seen. And it was, you know, my wife and I were super grateful to be a part of that and just take that in for sure.
And I know Nelly was a big baseball guy early on in his life. And I wonder if he ever, like, was like, hey, you give me some tips in the back. Yeah. You got a little cage out there.
Yeah. He, you know, he would come through my, you know, my first few years with the Cardinals, he was always coming through the clubhouse, big time Cardinals supporter. Like you said, he's just a big baseball fan in general. Got to run into Murphy Lee whenever I was with the Braves, playing. He's a big time baseball fan as well. So like being able to like come full circle and be at his event and, you know, chop Second. It up, talk the game of baseball. It was really cool.
That's so neat, man. So they call you Big City. Everyone calls you Big City, but you're not. You're from a town of like 3,000 people.
Not even. I think 11. I think Phillipsburg's population is maybe 1,200 now. Man. It's wild. We're out in the sticks, out in the country. A lot of land and whatnot. But yeah, Lance Berkman, one spring training, I showed up. I think it was 2012, big league camp. He came up to me, put his arm around me, and was just like, And granted, back then in 2012, I was pushing 285, 290. So I was big, but it was definitely probably more big country than big city. But he kind of put his arm around me. He was like, I'm tired of big guys being nicknamed big country. So we're going to put a spin on it and call you Big City. And then it just kind of stuck. Freeze, after Berkman left in 13, Freeze kind of took over and just kind of kept it running, and it just stuck. But I love the nickname, and everybody I come across is like, dude, that's one of the best nicknames in the game of baseball. So,
it's good. It's definitely a good one. We heard it a lot throughout the last 15 years, man, obviously. So, but coming from a town of 3,000, how was that like in the upbringing of baseball? And it's so different. And I'm from a town of 500. So you're talking my type of language.
Yeah.
Obviously that's a different upbringing. You went to a D2. So talk to me about that upbringing through baseball for you.
Yeah, no, I just, you know, it was kind of, you know, not heard of for guys to make it out of, you know, small towns and be able to make a career in baseball. But I knew like from such a young age that's what I wanted to do. You know, I loved the game from such a young age. I wanted to do everything in my power to, you know, to just, you know, be competitive in high school and then go on and play collegiate ball and see where it took me from there. And we had a, you know, my best friend's dad started a little travel league in the fall that we would go play. I didn't grow up with, you know, a lot of resources to where like I was traveling every weekend to go do these, you know, perfect game showcases, all that kind of stuff. I did not do that. My friends and I played a lot of pickup games just, you know, down in our little like local area where there were three or four fields. We we get, you know, 10 guys together, we have a pitcher, a catcher, and, you know, we just go at it and just play. And then, you know, my high school, all 4 years in high school, we were competitive, you know, went on the States, played. And then I actually was supposed to go to University of Pitt to continue my career there. And, you know, things fell through the cracks for whatever reason. And Slippery Rock came calling Division II in, you know, Western PA. And after my freshman year, I kind of knew that I was, you know, I could compete with the best in the country. After my sophomore year, had a really good year, and then got asked to go play in the NECBL Summer Collegiate League, and ended up being the MVP in that league. And then that's whenever I, like, was really on the map, and I was like, hey, like, I have the potential to get drafted. And had a, you know, hit almost 500 my junior year at Slippery Rock, and then ended up getting, you know, I was told, like, oh, you're going to get drafted, you know, 5th to the 10th round, 7th to the 10th round, somewhere along there. And then, you know, after that 10th round happened, didn't get a phone call. After the 15th round, didn't get a phone call. 20th round, and then I was like, okay, I got to get out of the house. I got to stop watching the computer screen and waiting for this call. So I went and, you know, just got out of the house, kind of like hit the reset button from the mindset, and then ended up getting drafted by the Cardinals in the 23rd round. So, and then the rest is history. So I carried that kind of, like, you know, always being told, you know, you're not good enough, you're never going to make it. I carried that with me and, you know, used it as a chip on my shoulder. Even like through the minor leagues, everybody was like, oh, you know, these guys from the D1 schools, they're going to blow you away. And like, I had 3 great years in the minor leagues and ended up debuting. And I'm like, no, you guys are wrong. Like, I'm here to stay. And, you know, I'm going to make a career of this. And that's what ended up happening. So it was awesome.
That's so incredible, man. I think you're making light work of what you did your last year at Slippery Rock, dude. I looked at it. First of all, let me just say, Scott Bender was a dude. I'm just going to say, Scott Bender.
You know Scott Bender?
Scott Bender. No, hey, man, I'm searching stuff.
Yeah.
Give me some credit on this.
I got you.
Scott Bender gets sticking a little bit. He went to a big city, but it would be like Light City or, like, I don't know. It'd be something like that. But, I mean, looking here, you went 495. Yeah, almost 500. Slugged 853. You had an OPS of 1.419. I got to ask, for mere mortals such as I, how does that feel? Like, what does it feel like going to the field when you're doing shit like that?
Yeah, it was fun strolling up to the ballpark, you know, play, because we played doubleheaders. You know, every game was a doubleheader. So it was cool. I knew that, like, I mean, when you're putting up those kind of numbers, like, I knew that I walked up to the plate and I expected to get a hit every single time. And, you know, obviously in the game of baseball, it's hard to do. But that year, you know, things, there was one series where we were in, I think we were at West Virginia State for a doubleheader. I ended up going 8 for 8 with 8 doubles. So it was like, like that kind of day will help those stats along. But no, it just had a, you know, I was surrounded with the lineup of great hitters. So they really couldn't pitch around me. Because we had guys 1 through 9 that would do damage my junior year, and it was a fun year to you know, be at Slippery Rock.
No, that's incredible, man. Yeah, guys all along this lineup, dude. You're telling, I mean, we'll bring up the names. We got Adam Drury, we got Matt Kosick. We had some names in there that were just bopping for you guys. So good for Slippery Rock. Good for
100%. Yeah, it's and then I think I don't know how many years after me, but Lou Trevino, the pitcher, the relief pitcher, he ended up getting drafted out of Slippery Rock too. So, like, PSAC baseball is really good and competitive baseball now. And it's, you're seeing year after year, guys getting drafted out of there. Kutztown, Mercyhurst, East Stroudsburg, like Shippensburg, like everywhere, CalU, PA, like, we got, you know, the state of Pennsylvania, they have some good talent, and, you know, we put them on the map for sure.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. So obviously you made your debut at 23, ran through the minor league system. So you were just bopping. You were doing amazing things as a hitter. When you got that first big league paycheck, what did that feel like? What was your splurge? What'd you do?
Yeah, I didn't do anything with it whenever I got it. Cause like I said earlier, I grew up, like, I didn't have a lot of money. So I knew that I had to change, but that off season, I was like, I'm getting myself a new car. Yes. And, I got home from the season, you know, I had some money saved up and I grabbed my dad and we went to the Ford dealership and I got a new F-150 truck. And that was like my baby. And then the following year, you know, another year. So after 2014 or after the 2013 season, in the off season, the first thing I did was I took out all the leather and put white leather seats in it with Big City in the headrest.
Love and
my favorite
it.
Bible verse, like Philippians 4:13. Like, so it was like, I was like, hell yeah, this is sick. But yeah, I'm a big car guy. So it's, you know, being able to like do that with my dad and whatnot. It was a cool moment for sure.
Yeah. And when you were in St. Louis, it was kind of an interesting transition period for you. It was like the first real like post Pujols time. And you being that first baseman over there, it felt like you were the first like full-time. There's a little Alan Craig action initially, but then you were the first full-time first baseman over there. What was that like handling those expectations?
Yeah. I knew, and guys would come in and tell me, they're like, hey, listen, like, we know like that you're not Pujols. I knew that I wasn't Pujols. Nobody was Albert Pujols.
No way.
They were like, we're not expecting you to like replace him and put up the numbers that he did. We just want you to go be yourself. Go be Matt Adams. Go be the guy that we drafted, that we saw all the way through the minors. And, you know, having that advice from teammates, from the coaching staff, from the front, like it was great. And it kind of like took a little bit of pressure off my shoulders. But I battled the injury bug, you know, the first few years in St. Louis. And we talked earlier about like my weight loss and stuff after the 16 season, but I had a bad hip injury that kind of like derailed like me being the everyday guy and whatnot. But, you know, I'm a big believer in things happen for a reason. And, you know, that happened where I knew that I had to get my body in shape if I wanted to keep playing at such a high level. But it was, you know, being able to like take over after Albert and put the birds on the bat on my chest and go out there and play in front of a packed house every single night, no matter if it was, you know, a Monday day game against Pittsburgh or if it was a Friday night series, you know, Cubs, Cardinals, big rivalry. You know, Busch Stadium was packed and rocking, and we knew going to the ballpark that it was going to be loud, it was going to be fun, and it was going to be, you know, action-packed throughout the whole game. So it was, you know, I was super blessed to be able to play in St. Louis when I did.
Now, one of the coolest atmospheres in baseball, hands down. Down 2-0, bottom 7, NLDS, you're facing the greatest pitcher of our generation probably. Walk me through that at-bat of your life.
Oh, you're not kidding. That was the at-bat of my life for sure. Just knew that I, you know, obviously Kershaw's Kershaw, and, you know, game 4 down 2-0, 2 innings left, first and second. I think it was a 1-0 count maybe.
Yep.
And I was always a good breaking ball, like strike hitter. So like, but you got to respect the fact back then Kershaw was 94, 95 with a 90 mile an hour cutter. And then that big breaker. So I was on time for the fastball. You know, that was my approach. I was wanting to line it hard back up the middle part of the field. And I saw that thing pop. And, you know, with how big it is, you know that it's got to be a big pop for it to be a strike. And I saw it and I was like telling myself, okay, this is one you want to go after. Like, hold your ground. Don't get too big and just get the barrel to it. Took a nice, easy swing. And, you know, one of those swings where you don't really feel the ball come off the bat. I saw the trajectory of it out to right field. Arms go up instantly.
Immediately.
I'm standing there at home plate, and then all of a sudden I see the ball kind of like dying toward the fence. I see Kemp sprinting back, and I'm like, oh shit, I gotta get on my horse and get on second base. And then I saw it go over the fence, saw the bullpen. I'm getting chills right now thinking about it. And then, big leap, you know, big hop in the air, turning to the dugout, celebrating, rounding the bases. I didn't feel like my feet hit the dirt the whole way around the plate, the bases. And then what people don't know, and I love telling this, is once I get in, celebrate with the guys in the dugout, give the curtain call, my adrenaline was so through the roof that like I had to go down in the cage and lay down and like collect myself, like I was like, dude, you got to get your shit together. You got two more innings of baseball to play to like close this thing out. Cause we did not want to go back to Dodger Stadium for game five. We did not want to get on that plane and go back and play game five in LA. So I was like, you gotta rein it in and lock it in for two more innings. And it was such a cool, like, moment. Like even like today, like, you know, I'll take my dog. We live in like a little like business district in a suburb of St. Louis. I'll be out there walking. My wife and I'll be walking the dogs, and people will be stopping us. Hey, I remember the homer off Kershaw. We'll be in the grocery store. Like, it's such like St. Louis is such a sports city that like it's so cool to like. There's so many retired athletes that stay here and make this place home. And it's just a great city, great environment, and just like I said, great sports city. So to be able to do that here at home, it was awesome.
Yeah, man. Just an incredible moment. I love watching that video. And like when you're high-fiving your first base coach, you're like, you can easily tell that you were like, am I going to? You were like banana peel.
He had to shove me back in so I didn't miss first base.
You're like, holy shit, I hit it. It's over.
Yeah, and then we get into once the inning was over, he came in, he goes, dude, I think you broke my hand. You smacked it so hard. It was so cool. So
what
cool.
A moment. What a moment. All right. Yeah. So I'm going to give you a stat line of someone that you just rocked in your career. I'm just gonna see if you can guess it. Okay. Just there's a lot of guys that big cities put a number on. Don't get me wrong. But 8 for 12, one double, two home runs. Any idea who this might be?
Jeff Samardzija.
Another guy that you bashed pretty good. Not quite. I'm gonna give you one more guess and I'll help you out.
Johnny Cueto?
Nope, not Johnny Cueto. Padres. Tall righty.
Starter?
Yes. First name with a T.
T. Oh, Tyson Ross.
Yep, there you go. Yeah. Tyson Ross. There it is. There it is. Samardzija, another guy that you did pretty well against too. Let's look. You went 9 for 20 with three jacks off of Jeff Samardzija. So you got a number of jacks off of him. Who are some guys that just like for some reason you just saw really well?
Those two guys, Cueto, I felt like I saw pretty well. And to be honest with you, anybody like in my first 3-4 years with the Cardinals, anybody from the Brewers, Pirates, and Reds, I felt like those were the three teams where I think I hit probably over 340 against all three of those teams. Like, so it was like, and granted, those are three great places to hit.
Probably.
But yeah, I just, there was a closer from two relievers, one okay. from the Brewers. I think his Hendrickson, maybe. There was a righty that was like late inning guy for the Brewers. I think I got two or three homers off him in some big time spots. Another one was Logan Andrusik with the Reds.
What a name. Name drop. Some, yep. Two jacks and seven at bats. You had two jacks and seven at bats of Logan Andrusik. Here's some other ones. We got Blake Wood, two homers off of. You got Wei Yin Shin, two homers off of.
Oh, the lefty from Miami. Yeah.
No. Some lefties on this list, too. That's the surprising part. Strasburg, you got a couple. Cueto, you got a couple. Now on the opposite end of the spectrum, I had to build you up. Now we got to talk. Just going to let you know, this isn't all just rainbows and sunshines here. Who are some guys that were some of the best arms that you faced and hadn't struggled with?
I mean, you know, you named one right there, Strasburg. Like, even though I got some good homers off him, I didn't see him the greatest. He had a good changeup to go with it. Scherzer was another one. Like, I think he does it to everybody. One of the greatest right-handed pitchers in the game. But I would say, like, dang. I think Scherzer was probably my least favorite guy to face for sure.
Why's that? What was the mix then?
He had a good two seam. He had a four seam that he would throw at the top. He had a cutter to go off that. He had a good changeup.
You're not sitting on anything. Like,
and the thing that made him so good is that he had such good command of every pitch where like you knew, like like you just said, you couldn't specifically sit on one pitch because he could throw all of them for strikes. And it didn't matter, like 2-0, 3-1 count, like you're not getting a cookie. Like he's throwing something with a wrinkle in it, some spin, get you off balance. And yeah, that his changeup gave me a lot of fits for sure.
No, that's a guy. Jacob DeGrom was another one that you got a lot of at
Yeah,
bats off of, it looks like. And of course. I mean,
not a good one.
you were seeing DeGrom at the height of DeGrom too. So
Oh yeah.
I get it. That's not an easy NL East matchup right there. It's like, oh
Yeah.
sweet, we have a slate against DeGrom again.
Oh yeah,
It's like,
DeGrom, and
cool.
then when Harvey was like the dark
Oh,
knight in
Dark
New
Knight.
York, like it was like, wow, okay, we really gotta hunker down and lock into these approaches off these guys, because we're like we may get like for the course of the lineup, we may get 2 to 3 mistakes total. Like we gotta make it count. Like, so
Oh,
it was
yeah, no, I mean, you got to get to the bullpen at some point, man, against those guys.
wow.
It's just tough, dude. Those guys are
For
hard to hit.
sure.
Do
Yeah.
you remember when you got flipped off by some fans in Cincinnati?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, that it wasn't my proudest moment for sure. Like I thought I had a beat on that ball. Like I you know, if you see the replay, the dude's glove was right like in the web of my glove. I felt like I was gonna catch it. And then it just got caught up in the moment. Kind of used the fan to help me get up off the tarp. Gave him a little shove, and then I didn't see it in the moment, but like I got in after the game, and you know, my buddies, my family, everybody sent me the clips of like the guy and his wife or girlfriend, whoever it was, just giving me the double bird. I'm like, this is crazy. And then I had our media guy come over and was like, hey, you're gonna have to answer to what you did, like to some questions and whatnot. I'm like, yeah, like I did it, like it is what it is. Like I'll own up to it. Like, but I used the guy to help me get up off the turf and or off the tarp and get back to the first base position.
I thought it was very convenient, though, that he waited till you turned around for the double guns.
Right,
I just had a
right.
feeling.
Yeah.
I had a feeling it
That
happened.
would have been another instance where, you know, if we had a hockey brawl, that guy may have gotten pulled out of the stands, jersey over the head, and just went at
Oh, shit. That
it.
is too funny. That's too funny. So I know we talked about it before the show. I want to bring it up because I thought it was really cool. So you said you lost 38 pounds showing up to 2017 spring training. So that's where I was confused, because you were big city. So were you Jack City, big city light? Like, what was
No, everybody was like, I showed up because like the thing was, because like social media was huge then, like I didn't want to let the secret out of the bag and like post like my like transformation and stuff. But like right leading up to spring training, you know, there was a photo that like the St. Louis newspaper put out there, side by side photo of like me, like I don't know if it was 2015, and then me like getting ready to head into the spring training, down 38 pounds, 12.5% body fat. And everybody was like, nah, you're no longer Big City. We're gonna call you Slim City. And like but like we talked earlier, like it was like I was a completely like different person. So like I went into that spring training like having to look like my body had to learn how to move again at that weight. Like it took me a little while to, you know, feel comfortable in the box with my swing. I felt great defensively. Like that was a year where like I think it was the last 10 days of spring training, they threw me out there in left field to get some reps. I ended up getting thrown out there and, you know, the opening series against the Cubs when Piscotty got hit four different times with the baseball rounding the bases. So I got thrown out there to left field and whatnot. So like it was such a cool like thing. Like I knew that I needed to make a change, but I didn't know like I was going to make that drastic of a change. And you know, I would do weekly weigh-ins. My trainer at the time, who's now my wife, she came in when the off season started, cleaned out my pantry in my apartment, put everything, like portioned everything out, snacks. So like I didn't have to think about it. I could just grab like when it was time to eat, I knew what I was going to eat, and I could just grab. Like it was easy. Yeah, that was probably one of the smartest decisions that I ever made in my career, was choosing to stay in St. Louis and really hunker down and, get after it with a training program for sure.
And it's not like it hurt your power. Obviously, you got dealt like not very long after that, but so maybe they were scared of the weight loss. Was there any talk about like did Matt Adams lose his sauce with the 38 pounds? Because you did hit 20 jacks that year.
Yeah, no, I think I tried. So going in like in that off season, I tried a swing change. Hands were way down by my waist, big bat tip, big leg kick. Could crush the ball in BP and cage sessions. Once I got into game action in spring training, my first 13 at bats, I think I went 0-for-13 with 12 strikeouts. And like could not touch a 90 mile an hour fastball at the top of the zone. And I was like, so I reached out to John Mabry, my hitting coach at the time with the Cardinals, and like sent him a message or after that last game. And I was like, this is it. Like I'm showing up early from here on out through the rest of spring. And I'm getting back to like Matt Adams, the guy that got me here. Like, this is what I got to get back to. So like, I don't know if they were necessarily scared about the power, but like I got dealt to the Braves when Freddie got hit in the wrist and broke his wrist. So like I went from like not being an everyday guy with St. Louis and for the 2017 season to going over the Braves and knew that I was going to be like the everyday first baseman. So like I knew that I was getting everyday at bats, killed it. Freddie comes back after the All-Star break, doing so good. He goes to management, was like, hey, like I'm willing to move to third base to keep Matt's bat in the lineup. And that lasted, like, when I heard that, I was like, yo, this is crazy. Like, this is a Hall of Fame type player. This is the Braves, like, franchise icon wanting to move to third base so I could keep getting at bats. I was like, this is freaking awesome. And then he came in and was like, yo, like my shoulder's not built up for the longer throw, but he was nasty over there. He spun some double plays and like, he's just like, Freddie's a man. Like he is awesome.
And talking about some of your teammates, I know we talked a little bit before, but tell me about the prank from AJ Pierzynski and John Jay.
So we're in Cincinnati, in between like BP getting ready for the game. AJ's passed out on the couch. And John Jay decides to take a funny picture with him as he's sleeping. So, like, that, gets up behind AJ, does the picture, I think is, pants maybe down, whatnot. I'm not going to go into super specific details, but he definitely got AJ for sure. And AJ was not happy at all. But it's just stuff like that in the clubhouse, like the pranks, the brotherhood, of just, being in that close knit, like family space in the clubhouse dynamic where like, that's the stuff I miss now, like being on the other side of, the game on the coaching side. Like I miss the time with the boys in the clubhouse showing up, going to battle, sitting down after the game, breaking down how the night's game went, having a beer or two, talking about the game. Like that's the stuff that that really like, you make memories out of, you hold close to your heart and whatnot. So it like, we had such a cool clubhouse dynamic with the Cardinals that it was fun every single day, no matter what. We had fun in that clubhouse for sure.
Who are some teammates that stuck with you in terms of that culture and what really made those guys excellent?
Yeah, I think, I think it was the group with the Cardinals. It was, John Jay, Daniel Descalzo, AC, Freeze, Colton Wong, Michael Wacha. Like that group, like Jay, Descalzo, and Freeze were like the three guys that really like took me under their wing. Like whenever I was a rookie, showed me what it was like to be a true professional, both on and off the field. And that's what I hold close to me, and that's what I carry on. Even like, I know that I'm so new like into the coaching space, but like I've had such a lot of experience like playing at the highest level that I carry that with me even to the coaches, helping them along, whether it's a new coach or whether it's a guy that may not, maybe first year at that specific level. Like, so those are the guys that really like shaped me early on, in my Cardinals career. And then like moving on to like Atlanta, we had Kurt Suzuki, Tyler Flowers, Freddie. And then, you know, Max Fried was a young guy. They're like just guys like that, that really just knew like how to go about their business on a daily basis, on and off the field. And then, you know, getting over to the Nationals, got to play with Kurt Suzuki again over there. But we had, you know, Zim was great. Trey Turner, Harp, my first year there in 18, Scherzer, Strauss, like, and then we got in 19, we got Anibal Sanchez, Gerardo Parra. Like just guys like that, that like, I'm like, I kick myself like still to this day, like, man, I got to share the clubhouse in the field with these guys, like that are superstars. Like, this is amazing. Like this game, like will bring you so much joy, passion, and everything about it. It's just, it's such a unique sport. And like, that's like you touched earlier about like me loving the game. That's like, that's why I love it. It's just, it's so unique. And it's such, you know, a close knit group of like, it's basically like a fraternity. It's a yeah. brotherhood in the game of baseball. And it's awesome.
I mean, with 162, you have no other choice. I mean, exactly. you're going to be with those guys every day, no matter yep. what. And, yep. and speaking of the culture, there was a pretty excellent culture going on in 2019. Might not have felt like that right away. You guys were 19 and 31 in May. Awesome. What changed? Like what happened there?
Yeah, it was, you know, we got those two guys that I just talked about, Sanchi and Parra. We got them in a trade piece, and they came over. We had Brian Dozier there that was a great clubhouse guy, great leader. We those three guys just helped kind of bring the group together. And, you know, we ended up having a motto that we were just like, let's go 1-0 every day. Like, forget what everybody else in the league is doing. Let's take care of our business. And we just slowly chipped away and slowly put, you know, things together. And that culture changed in that clubhouse. We started having fun. Like, we started having, like, after wins, we'd have, like, our victory song on. We would, like, be dancing in the clubhouse. Guys just hooting and hollering, carrying on, having a good time. And like that, just, we carried that with us day after day after day. And, you know, we looked up at the end and we were in the wild card game. And then we just got hot at the right time.
Yeah.
It was that was a fun ass season for sure.
So obviously it was a collective unit, but was there what felt like an emotional leader in that locker room?
I don't think I can put one specific name on it. I just think like I think we were the oldest team in baseball that year. So like I think like just like the veterans that had been with the Nationals forever. I think Scherzer was a great leader, Zim was a great leader, Zook and Yan Gomes handled the catching duties. They were great leaders. It was just Dozier. Yeah. It was Soto, even though he was a young dude, like he had a like a leadership quality about him where he led by example. He let his play speak for itself. Trey Turner, Anthony Rendon, everybody just kind of like they prepared, like probably one of the like the better groups that like I was with, like in terms of like preparation. Like, don't get me wrong, like the Cardinals, like they were great preparers as well, but like that group in 19, we just Howie Kendrick was another one. Him and Adam Eaton were like two like of the position players that like really got everybody to come close together. But yeah, I couldn't put one specific name in there and to label that. I just think it was a collective group effort where like we got everybody pulling in the same direction where we knew that like we had a special group and we didn't want to let up until that last out was recorded, and that last out was recorded in Houston, and we brought that championship back to DC.
Man, what was it like with obviously having Juan Soto on your team? You got to play with him early, young Juan Soto. Obviously, we're seeing what he's doing now. Was there something, obviously the numbers were the numbers, but when you were watching that, what was it like seeing that in person?
Oh, dude. When he made his debut and he went oppo, left on left over the visiting bullpen in DC, I'm like, yo, who is this guy? Like, this guy's the real deal. And then like it was just game after game after game, like watching him go out there, like the confidence that he carried at such a young age, like you don't see that too often from a lot of guys. And like he knew he was that good like from an early age, and he did not let anybody tell him any other way. Like, he knew that he was that good, and he was going to go out there and show the world that he was Juan Soto. And he's still today. I think it's crazy. The last couple of years, guys are talking about, like, how down of a year he had. Like, you look at his numbers, it's like, the dude's still killing it. Like, maybe his batting average is 5 points below what his career average is, but, like, he's walking a shit ton. His OPS is through the roof. He's still driving in runs. Like, he's just a great player all around. And the cool thing about him is he wants to get better. He's not okay just being where he is at now. Like, he wants to be better each and every year. And, like you just don't see that too often.
A down year with a 160 OPS plus and almost went 40-40.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Randomly it's crazy. 38 stolen bases just out of nowhere. It's just like, okay, that's bad.
Yeah.
That's bad. Like, it was the contract worth it. You know, it's like, man.
Right.
Give me another one of them guys, please.
Can 100%. I have one? Yep, for sure.
So talk to me about the post-championship buzz in 2019. What was that like?
It was wild. We went back to the hotel. Everybody was just in the lobby in that hotel in Houston, partied it up. And then we knew that we were flying back to DC the next day. Families were on the plane. Like, just everybody was like so excited. Like it really hadn't sunk in yet, like, until we got back to DC, but like we flew back on the plane. Like, we are the champions is blasting on the plane. The everybody's kids were trick-or-treating up and down the aisle of the plane. It was just like something like you don't hear of. Like, it was just like, it was so surreal, like, to be able to do that. And then we land in DC, we go to the Caps game. We're down there after the game, you know, hanging out with Ovi, TJ Oshie, like, that group, like, those guys get after it. It was so fun to, like, be in that clubhouse. Like, because, like, our clubhouse was, like, big. Like, that hockey clubhouse is not that big, and everybody's just in there, like, close-knit, tight, getting at day one. So everybody was in a great mood. Like, I think some guys went out on the ice after everybody was out of the arena, you know, skate, like, no skates on, took a stick, tried some slap shots, guys fell down on their asses. Like, and then we ended up having the parade, and you know, we did the parade in the White House, you know, in consecutive days. So, like, that was just like, it was unreal to, like, turn on to, like, Pennsylvania Avenue and just see, like, the sea. I want to say that it was close to 800 or 850,000 people showed up for the parade that day. Like, it was unbelievable. There were snipers up on the rooftops of the buildings on Pennsylvania Avenue. And it was just like, what? I'm like, I'm in a movie right now. This is not real life. And then the next day we're walking through the White House, meeting the president, like in the Oval Office, having him, you know, congratulate us. And I was like, this is, you know, I was able to have my wife, my kids were there, like, my stepkids were there. It was like, it was such a cool, like, moment that, like, we got, you know, we got pictures hung up in our house, like, with it. And it's just like, I walk by and I'm like, it takes me right back to that moment. It's just such a cool, like, experience. And you know, I touched on it earlier, but that those group of guys, like, those are friends for life, like, because of, like, what we did in 19. And it's just like, we could go, like, a year without talking and, like, pick up the phone and call them and they answer. And it's just like, we just hung out, you know, yesterday.
Yeah.
Just special group of guys. Everybody's families got along. It was such a unique year and such a fun year.
And that shows the power of baseball, man. And I can see exactly, just hearing you talk, dude, you can see where your passion is with the game and exactly why you're still in a dugout and will be in a dugout. What's it like now transitioning to the coaching space, and what's been different about that and attacking that?
The biggest thing for me, like, that's been different is really understanding, like, the analytics. Cause, like, whenever I was playing, like, I wasn't a big numbers guy. I wasn't a big, like, if I focused on all that stuff, it was like, my mind was clogged and I wasn't able to go out and do the job that I knew that I needed to do. So, like, from the coaching side, I know that, like, the human element is still very real. Like, these players are not robots. Like, they're humans. Like, so we can't fully rely on analytics to like spit out a lineup or like tell us what this guy's going to do on any given night. Like, they're still human beings. So like understanding like what matters and what really like shouldn't be like talked about to a player, like maybe day of the game. That was like a big learning curve for me this past year, but also like, it was so unique because I was able to jump straight in at the AAA level. I was so like newly removed from playing that I felt like I was able to relate to that, relate to those guys so well. Like, you know, it was cool to like be able to help them like prepare, like if they were getting caught up, like, hey, like they'd come to me and be like, hey, what should I expect? How should I act? Like, so I didn't really face too many challenges transitioning. It was like more like things that were like cool and unique that I didn't really think would happen. Like guys leaning on me and like asking for like advice. Like I wasn't the hitting coach, but I helped out in the cage. Like I handled the infield. Like I had my hands in a little bit of everything last year. I handled the infielders. I hit fungos, helped the manager position. Like he would do the defense or the outfield positioning. I would do the infield positioning. I was the assistant hitting coach, helped out in the cage. I even got to manage, I think, like five games, like solely on my own. Like, so it was like last year was such like a unique year that I was able to have my, you know, hands in a little bit of every bucket of the game and really dive in and learn and have an open mind. That's just the way I like to approach life in general, is having that open mindset. You know, what is meant for me will come, but I also have to go out there and get it and pursue that. And that's like, that's the way that the mentality that I want to take, like as I continue my coaching career as well.
That's a great answer, man. And I have some genuine curiosity too, because I think the position that you're coming from is very, very important for today. So what I mean, exactly what you said at first about the numbers, where a lot of data, there's so much data of, okay, this pitcher throws X, Y, Z. Here's the percentage of when they're doing X, Y, and Z. And then to hand that over to a 21-year-old and be like, okay, now execute same game plan, said game plan, is incredibly hard. Where, how do you have that human element where it's, where I think you come in as that guy. I think that's very interesting. And for you to be that bridge between a computer and a person.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was huge. It was like to be able to like, you know, obviously the guys like at the level that I was at, they did their homework the night before. They knew who they were facing because we had the video and the data and the like all these apps that like now that like, you know, the orgs will like put their information in and guys can access it at home on their phones, on their computers. So, like we had a great group of guys that like they did their homework the night before each game and they came in and they had a plan. But if they had a question about it or why they think, you know, X, Y, Z should happen, like they would come and ask me, hey, what's your thought? You played, you faced guys like this. How did you, what was your mindset? What was your approach on a guy that had a really good sinker, but also a good like ride heater? Like, what would you do? Like, so it was very cool and like unique to be able to dive in with them. Like one, like I didn't really want to like spend a lot of time with them and get their like and fill their brain with too much information. I took the stance of like, I always wanted to be simple. Clear and simple, because that's what I wanted whenever I was a player. I wanted my coaches to be clear and simple. I didn't want to overcomplicate it. I didn't want to give them too much information, or I didn't want to have too much information. So like, that's the way that I approached my guys last year or this past year. And they loved it. Like, it was like, I, you know, the first time that I did it with a player, like the next day there'd be three guys in there. Yeah. Like once we got done with their hitting routine, that they would like, you know, once we were picking up balls, they would, you know, we'd talk about, or we would set up the machine and be like, the guy had a really good breaking ball. We would try to replicate that spin coming out of the machine where they were like getting game reps off that breaking ball. So then whenever they saw it in the game, it was like just second nature. They could just trust that they were like prepared and just go play the game.
And that's the thing. I think there's a lot in today's game is the lack of human element with the numbers, because it's a numbers world. I mean, it's a numbers world, because that seems what's proof and what's evident and it's factual. But you know, you can have this data sheet all you want, but how do you execute it? In for you to be that human element, to that, I think is massive. And that's what a coach is. So that's incredible stuff.
Yeah. And I think like one other point is I think there's got to be a happy marriage between like the numbers and like what we're talking about, the human element, like, because I think there is you're silly if you don't want
ignore the numbers overall. Yeah,
100%. Like, of course. But you also have to understand that like that pitcher may not have his best stuff that day out on the mound. So like you gotta trust your eyes. You gotta watch. Yes, you're prepared. You watched video of his previous starts or previous three starts. But what is he doing tonight? Maybe he's not landing that breaking ball for a strike. So maybe we can eliminate that pitch from the get-go. Maybe we're sitting dead red. And if we see spin, we're giving up. And then we're, you know, we look up and we're 2-0. Now we're ready to do some damage. Yeah.
No.
So I think there's got to be that happy marriage between the
absolutely
two.
Absolutely, man. And I could go on with you about this, I think, for a long, long time. But I'm going to leave the listeners a little bit out of that.
Yeah.
Just for a minute, but just in general, Matt, thank you so much for your time, man. I really can't appreciate you enough for hopping on and giving us this great insight of your stories, your background, everything about you in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, absolutely. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for reaching out, wanting me to jump on the show. It's been an absolute blast, and just really enjoy being with people that love talking about the game and share the same passion that I do. So I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks again for listening, guys. Again, go follow us on Spotify, subscribe on YouTube, check out all our socials, Baseballer or The Baseballer Show. Thanks again, guys. Peace.